Blog Talk Radio.
Living Out Loud, hosted by Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power, an in-depth study of professional women in a relationship. She's an expert on depression, women's issues, and attaining happiness. Dr. Birnbaum has been featured on Oprah 2020 and some of the biggest TV radio venues in the world. Now, without further ado, here's your host of Living Out Loud, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum.
Thank you very much, Ryan. We have a great show today. We have someone who really knows how to have it all, and it will be intriguing and I know helpful to many listeners. We also have a surgeon, a plastic surgeon, that's going to discuss the pros and cons of surgery, and wouldn't we all want to know what we should do and how to make the right choice for ourselves. So, you know, before we get on this interesting program, I think there's something we really need to talk about, and that's domestic abuse. You know, the Super Bowl's coming up, and all these wonderful athletes will be seen, and we're looking forward to it. But why is it that a certain population has more of these problems than others? You know, there's an answer to that, because I personally did research on this, and I investigated and found out that these men who have abusive relationship, who are the abusers, also are the ones that have aggressive careers, and they bring that aggression home with them. Men who are professionals, men who do not have such aggressive careers, are more supportive. These men see women in a way where there's equality, and they bring that home with them. So it's extremely important to be able to see clearly what the right kind of relationship is when you're not at home and how to reinforce that when you are home. And that's a little bit of my quick take on domestic abuse.
Okay. And Frieda, we have one of our first guests. She's amazing. Her name is Christy Whitman. She is a New York Times best-selling author. She's the creator of the Enlightened Kid program, a life coach, a transformational leader, CEO, and founder of Quantum Success Coaching Academy. Without further ado, please welcome to the show, Ms. Christy Whitman.
Hi, Frieda. Thank you so much.
Hi, Christy. How are you? It's just a pleasure having you. I'm reading about your bio and all the things you've done, and looking at this, you really have wonderful information and advice for our listeners. So what would you say would be the one main theme in your life that helped you to survive it all?
You know, I don't think it's been one thing. It's, you know, life is a series of things that happen, and it's really the choices that we make, which way, which path we're going to put our feet on and which path we're going to continue to move forward on. The ones that we focus on what we don't want and what we don't have, and really the path of lack, or the path of abundance and what we do want and what we are looking forward to and what we are appreciating in the now. So it's those pivotal moments when things happen, when we ask ourselves, you know, what do I want? Why do I want it? How do I want to feel? And then start feeling that way.
But that's true. But, you know, you seem like a person who has a lot of energy. And that energy is being used during emergency mode in your life. Because, look, you know, you rushed your child, your baby, for open-heart surgery. You went through a divorce. You worked yourself out of $90,000 of financial debt. You know, that takes a lot of, I guess, chutzpah is the word. But, you know, a lot of drive. And so there is a theme here where you are ready to do what it is you have to do. Not everybody can be ready for the moment and know how to take this kind of necessary inertia. So when we're talking about, you know, what you've done and how you've done it, and you're saying that, you know, the art of having it all. So what do you have now that says that you have it all?
You know, for me, having it all is, you know, it is the outside stuff. And when I mean the outside stuff, it's the health in my body. It's having the money in the bank. It's having the career I just absolutely love, having a passionate marriage, having the adorable kids that are just so much fun to be around. But for me, it's at an even deeper level. It's knowing that in this moment, I have connection and I have the ability to be with all of me and to be present in every moment in my life and to experience and appreciate those moments. And even when contrast, what I consider contrast, when things that we don't necessarily enjoy or don't like, or even if we're in crisis mode, we have the ability to shift those things. We have the ability to look at a divorce or really bad debt or losing someone in our lives or, you know, whatever it is. We have the ability to look at those things and say, okay, I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to experience this. But for the most part, I don't want to keep attracting this. So what do I want? And then really being able to know that within, we have the power to choose something differently in our lives and holding that vision of what that different looks like.
You know, that's so true. And, you know, staying with the moment is what is really spoken about, that staying with what it is that you need to do and knowing what it is you need to do because nobody can tell you. But how do you do that? How do you stay with the moment when there are so many things pulling you in all directions? You know, what do
that's a good question.
You know, how do you distract yourself from everybody and all these noises around you, all these musts that need to be done, and really focus and centering yourself? Because you seem to have done that, and you seem to have known what the answers were. You know, most of us can't really stay with that. Is there something you could tell us, a suggestion of what we could do?
Yes, well, for one thing, I think a lot of people have a messed up definition of what having it all means. And what I mean by that is most people think that having it all means doing it all. And so, you know, there's a lot, like you said, there's a lot grabbing our attention these days. There's a lot that we can spread ourselves too thin. Having it all is not about perfection. It's not about spreading ourselves too thin. It's not about doing everything that we possibly can. Having it all is, you know, being able to say, you know, what do I enjoy? What do I like to do? You know what, I don't like cleaning my house, so I'm going to hire someone to clean my house. I don't, you know, like I have my team and my business. The things I don't enjoy doing, one step at a time, I started, you know, hiring people to do those things that I didn't enjoy. It didn't happen overnight. But it's like I consistently check in with myself and go, you know, this whole process of bookkeeping or this process of cleaning my house or this process of, you know, whatever it is, I don't enjoy doing. I know that there's someone out in the universe that likes doing this, would love for me to hire them to do this, and I'm going to allow them to do this. I'm going to pay them to do this so that I can spend the time doing the things that I love. And so I can give more to the children that I have, to the marriage that I have, to the business that I have, to myself, because I'm not spreading myself so thin that I have to do all the things, because having it all is not doing it all.
So do you think having it all could, I'm sorry, Ryan, go ahead.
Oh, no,
I'm sorry. I'm going to say quickly, and then I'm going to let you talk. I wanted to get this in, and I don't really, you know if there's something that is pressing at the moment, but this one thing is. So it's really important for me and viewers to know that having it all may not even be the best thing for you, that actually having the ability to have joy and maybe not having the need to be so busy with everything that we feel we need to keep score of adding on to everything we already have could be the best ingredient for you, just to keep in a place where there's peacefulness and to have the time rather than the pressures of having to always. What do you think about that? Do you think that's a better lifestyle than
what I wrote in Art of Having It All, and it's really important,
yes,
is that we all need to define what having it all is for ourselves, because we don't all want the same thing. And when we can start coming back to ourselves and going within and asking, what do I really want? What does make me happy? you know, then we don't feel that outside pressure because we're more connected to ourselves. We don't feel that outside pressure of all the shoulds. Well, you should be doing this, and you should want this, and you should, when you're a woman, you should want to get married and have kids and go to work. And, you know, that's not everybody's definition of having it all. One woman's definition of having it all is being a stay-at-home mom, having her husband, you know, bring home the money so she gets to be fully present and just 100% focused on raising her kids. You know, another woman's definition of having it all might be, you know, going out and having that amazing career and not having a family. You know, so
that's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. But the problem is some of us don't even know what we want in order to have what is we need. So that's, you know, so I'm going to people who really need even more help before they even decide what it is that they need to do. A lot of us don't even know what we want. But, Ryan, you were going to say something and I interrupted
yes,
you as well.
Yes, yes. Christy. You know, when you go to your website, if you go to, everyone should go to ChristyWhitman.com, ChristyWhitman.com, and when you go to your site, you get to see a lot of great things about your courses and what you're teaching. And I found particularly interesting that you really do focus on the law of attraction to bring things in your life. What I want to ask is this, is that sometimes when people are in a very depressed state, or they're very upset, they cannot help but focus a lot of their concentrated effort on the pain for which they are enduring. And comparatively speaking, do you find that people actually manifest sometimes faster on negative things because they're in insufferable pain as opposed to positive things because it seems to be a very tough effort to maintain hope when things are very negative? Do you find that to be something that you've endured with and dealt with, people that you're personally coaching?
Well, I love that question. Thank you. And we attract and manifest quickly whatever vibration we are sending out. So for myself, I didn't always have this information. 18 years ago, I was in a bad place. I was 30 pounds overweight, $60,000 in debt. I mean, it goes on and on and on. I was very negative. And every experience I was attracting in my life happened quickly because I was in a negative space. So I was really attracting a lot of negative things consistently in my life. And as I started to change my thoughts and started to focus inward on myself and started doing meditation, started raising my vibration, now I'm in a place where my vibration and my energy is so much different. I mean, I'm a totally different person than I was back then. And I do manifest things very quickly, very easily, turnaround after turnaround, because I remain in that high vibration. So the universe likes speed, and the universe is abundant, and the universe is always going to give you an abundance of whatever you're vibrating. So if you're in lack and limitation, the universe is going to give you an abundance of evidence that shows lack and limitation. But if you're in an abundance of abundance, if you're in an abundance of a feel-good vibration, the universe is going to give you evidence of that consistently and quickly.
That's so true. Okay. That's so well said.
Thank you. Isn't that great, Ryan,
to know this? It's so helpful.
Now
we can only do this. That would be the best thing. I was just wondering, now, are you religious? Do you believe in any kind of faith?
You know, I kind of separate in my own mind religion and spirituality to be very different. There obviously are religious people that are also spiritual. For me, I was raised Catholic and always felt there was something more. I was searching. And it wasn't until I found meditation and really connected with my own inner being and found the universal laws that I started to feel my spirituality and connect with my spirituality. So for me, I'm more focused on spirituality than a religion, and I'm currently not. I'm more like a new thought religion, if you want to think of it that way. But spirituality and my divine connection, that's how I live through and from in my life.
So did that help you with your sister? I know she committed suicide. Was that a factor with your ability to heal your spiritual beliefs?
Absolutely, uh-huh. Because at the time, you know, what I believe is that as spirits, we never die. We just go from form to form. We come in as non-physical energy. We take on a human body, and then we go back to non-physical. And so when she decided to do what she did, she decided to end her own life, I still was open to the fact that, well, she's still non-physical energy. And because I had that belief, because we totally attract from our beliefs, our whole experience perception is based on what we believe is to be true. I would see evidence after evidence of coincidences that were just crazy with her just trying to, like, say hi, you know. I mean, just really funny things that would happen. And I still have her in my life. I still feel like, you know, even though she's not in a physical human female body, she's still very much part of my life, still partner with me on the other side of the veil, still watching out for her little sister. And that really got me through. Of course, I had the humanness of my own loss, which we all do. And so I had to go through my anger, and I had to go through my sadness, and I had to go through my questioning and all that process that any loss can bring up. But the bigger divine part of me that I was thankfully connected to at that point allowed me to see that this truly isn't the tragedy that it is. It is in one level, but at another level, she's still very much around.
That's wonderful. That's a healing experience just to hear this. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense. So are you saying that if you pull people in towards you, they will actually come to you spiritually and they will connect on a certain level?
Absolutely. I do that I've done that with attracting my ideal partner. I've done that with attracting people
really?
In my business. Oh, yeah. I'm in the process of doing that right now. I need a web team. And I'm like, you know what? I'm getting really clear on the kind of person that I want on my team, the qualities that they have, the things that they would do. And I'm like, that person is there. I feel that person as a spirit. Because we all manifest everything with energy first. It doesn't matter if it's money, a person in our lives, the way we want our bodies to look. We all attract and manifest first with the feeling sense of energy and the vibration. So by feeling that this person is already in my life, I'm going to attract this person really quickly.
So tell us how to manifest the right kind of relationship. You're saying think about it and it'll be set up. You'll set up to happen in a certain way when you have these. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Hey, I was going to say, we're pre-paving any experience that's going to happen in the future. It could be a future of a minute, 5 minutes, a week, a month. It doesn't matter what the future is. Whatever energy and whatever thought process and belief that we hold to be true, that's what's going to manifest. So, for example, if we hold the thought and the feeling of excitement, because my ideal partner is coming and I know he's going to be amazing and it's going to be fun and we're going to have great times together, we're going to see movies, and we're going to go dancing, we're going to vacation, you know, that excitement energy is going to be like a magnet to what is possible in the universe. But if you're like, oh, I want my ideal partner, but God, you know what? There's just no good men out there. They're all taken. They're either gay, they're married. You know, that negativity is blocking that person from coming into your life. Or even if you're like excited about it or you're thinking positively about it, like, yeah, he's out there. But you're like, can you constrict? Do you feel fearful about, you know, the relationship at all, even before it comes? That's going to be an indication of what the relationship will be when the actual person shows up. The manifestation, everything's energy. The manifestation of that man or that woman or that money or that client or that career, it all starts with our own thought process, the feelings, the beliefs that we hold. It's all energy first, and the matter then comes after.
So life can be very exciting. You just have to be able to believe in your thoughts. And as I said, you have to really have the right thoughts. A lot of people aren't able to even know what it is they want. But once you do, if you hold on to that, that's what you project, and that's what happens, and that's what you become. So you did the same thing with business as well. What did you want from your business? What were you looking for?
I think about from a business perspective, like I think of the duties, right? Like what this person would do, what skills they need to have. But then I go further and I think about what qualities, like who are the kind of people I love to work with? What are the, you know, the people that I work with now, and I've got an amazing team, I call them my dream team. Like what is their thought process? You know, do they believe in law of attraction? Do they, you know, are they positive uplifters? Are they fun? Are they, you know, conscientious? You know, those are the kind of qualities, and I write out the list of those kind of qualities in a person, and I see myself connecting and already experience. Like I'm already watching the movie in my head of the interaction I'm going to have when that person comes.
Well, Christy Whiteman, you've been a pleasure to have on the show. Really inspirational for sure. Tell us about your website, please.
Absolutely.
Where can we reach you?
Yeah, you can go to two websites. One is theartofhavingitall.com, theartofhavingitall.com, or christywhitman.com.
Well, you've been an inspiration for sure. It's been a pleasure. Love to have you back. And thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Be well. Yes, our pleasure. And it was really helpful. I really learned a lot. And it was very comforting to hear all the things you did tell us. It makes a lot of sense. So thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, Frida. Coming up, this individual is incredibly amazing. His name is Donald Kress. He is a board-certified plastic surgeon with over 30 years of experience, and he's going to talk right now about some of the plastic surgery trends that are out there, and he's also going to discuss the real reasons why plastic surgery disasters are on the rise. So without further ado, please welcome to the program Dr. Donald Kress. Dr. Kress, how are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you for having me on your program.
Hi, welcome to our show. What a fascinating subject, especially today with all these selfies and everybody is competing to look as good as they can. I was just wondering, when is it too much? When do you feel a person is really going overboard when they need little things to be done that really could make a difference, but is it really that important to go under the knife? Are there times that you just say no?
Absolutely. But I think that my old professor, when I was first coming up in the field of plastic surgery, said that if you aren't rejecting one out of every three patients that come into your office because they have unrealistic expectations, you're not doing a service to your patients. And I think that's fallen by the wayside. You know, the plastic surgery marketplace has become so competitive that I think a lot of people, not only there are a lot of unqualified plastic surgeons out there doing surgery, but I think that the standard is lowered, and that's resulting in a lot more dissatisfied patients and even injured patients.
So more people are having surgery, and there are more concerns for surgeries that are not going well. And why do you think that's happening? Why are the surgeons not having this need to have excellence with their performance? Why are they slacking on the job here?
Well, I think you're putting a lot of different people into the same basket that really don't belong there. I think that there are very ethical, extraordinarily well-trained plastic surgeons who run very ethical practices, do refuse patients with unrealistic expectations, and get excellent results. One of the problems is the people that but they belong to societies that have very strict codes of ethics. So I tell patients that if you see a really, really good website, chances are it's not a board-certified surgeon because his board of ethics won't allow him to do those things. So the people that are doing the most marketing, the most impressive, the most elegant marketing, probably aren't, you know, board-certified, and they're probably not subscribing to that code of ethics. So there's a lot of people out in the field of plastic surgery, and that name is not trademarked, that really are not properly qualified. Just a quick example, there was a gentleman in Florida who was running an ad for liposuction in his outpatient clinic, and he was board certified. But if you looked into it, he was board certified podiatrist who needed a few extra bucks because he had two kids in college and he had a little operating room in the back. So he went to a two-hour course on liposuction and started liposuctioning people until he injured about 12 people. And then the state of Florida finally got around to checking on him and shut him down. But that's happening all over the place now. That's not a rare circumstance.
So the problem is, you know, we're so hooked on the internet here that we believe that everything we see, and people are more visible. They promise you much more than they can deliver at times. And we're gullible, and you're saying we just go and we don't investigate enough to make sure that we're in good hands. And that's where the problems begin, where we have botched up surgeries. So is it though,
Frida, could I just pause you guys for one second? I just want to make sure that we talk to Donald. If you want to check out Donald's information, you go to trustmeimaplasticsurgeon.com. They've got some pretty amazing examples, and he's also got a website called plasticsurgery1.com. I just want to make sure we got those in there, because if you go through that, it's pretty amazing some of the examples you have in the book. So it's just, I want to know if you're interested by this so far. You got to check it out.
Explain that a little bit more. My practice name is plasticsurgery1.com, but about a year, not quite a year ago, I wrote a book called Trust Me, I'm a Plastic Surgeon, which is a little facetious name, but that came from a discussion I had with my wife, who's a psychologist, and she said probably the best legacy you could leave, because you're getting near retirement age, would be to take all this advice you're giving to the people that are coming to that are injured and had, you know, extraordinarily bad results, and put it in a book so people would really have a guide to what are the things that you need to check on. And, you know, people know that they're supposed to check on board certification, but I just told you one example when the board certification failed. But there's lots of other things, including some just actual scams that are being run by doctor's offices, and all of that's in the book. So by going through the book, you're going to be very well prepared for, you know, kind of the shenanigans, excuse that silly expression, but that are out there in the marketplace right now. And it's just getting worse by the day.
You know, it just sounds like that book is mandatory before you make any kind of surgery decision having to do with plastic surgery, because people are really not informed. And a lot of these botched up surgeries are stem just from that. So this is something that we really are going ahead, spending all this money, and then we are disappointed because we're not doing enough research. We're running into this too much. So do you do some of these botched up surgeries? Are you the one that takes over?
It's actually become about 20% of my practice now.
Really?
And when I first went into plastic
surgery,
I would see one or two botched patients a year. Now it's nearly 20% of what I do. It's so outrageous now. And the other part about that, you know, I'm kind of a senior plastic surgeon, so the people that are injured kind of look for the senior people with the best reputation to go to see if they can get this corrected, and that's appropriate. And I've accepted that as part of my aging, that I get to take care of those patients. And, in fact, it's so sad because just another quick example, this is actually the lady I was talking about with my wife when she told me to write the book. I had a lady who went to a board-certified plastic surgeon in the Washington, D.C. area, and she checked on his board certification, and there he was. He was in the – and there's several ways you can do that. And there he was, so he started having surgery. And all she wanted to make her breast look a little bit better because she wanted to get a little romance back into her life, which is not an unusual request. Didn't come out well. The doctor said, well, it's her tissue that didn't work out and that he'd have to redo the surgery and she'd have to pay again. Well, when I saw her I'll fill in a little bit more of that story. When I saw her, she was $35,000 in debt, had five previous surgeries, and she hadn't allowed her husband to see her naked from the waist up in over 5 years. And what was happening was that this was a board-certified plastic surgeon, but he had a long history of substance abuse, and he had sanctions from the plastic surgery boards, he had sanctions from the District of Columbia, and he had sanctions from the hospital that he worked out of, but she never checked any of those things. She only checked on the board certification, thinking that that was adequate.
What a nightmare. What a nightmare.
And I see them all the time.
This is so dangerous and so scary. What type of surgery do you do most? Which are the most botched up surgeries that you have to do?
Well,
is there any one particular?
I was one of the researchers on some of the breast implants and also on some of the complications that go with breasts. So I think about 50% of my practice is based on breasts because I have that reputation. But I see botched up tummy tucks, liposuctions on a regular basis, breasts, unbelievable, just the disasters that can occur with the breast. And I probably don't see as many facelift disasters as the two guys on the botched program. In one sense, I think that the botched program is doing a service because it's pointing out to people how significant that is, but they have such eccentric patients. I mean, I'm not sure that the real-life people can relate to them as someone in the same boat as they are because it's so crazy entertaining, the patients that they have, but whatever. But they're at least pointing out
maybe,
that... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that's how they got into this place to begin with. They're not thinking of what they're doing, and they're too compulsive.
Sure.
That's the real problem. But, you know, it's really scary that these people who have all these issues that with their appearance now, with their comfort level, forget about the finance, they really don't often have doctors like you to go to. So they could go from one wrong person to the next wrong person. That's why something like you and the book that you've written and the listeners, if they're hearing, what they really need to do is read your book that will prevent them from a lot of, you know, a lot of scary events in their life. So
It's available on Amazon, and it's available on Kindle. And a month ago, it was became a number one bestseller on Kindle and Amazon. So.
And can you tell our listeners the name of the book again, please?
Certainly. It's the same as the website. Trust me, I'm a plastic surgeon. A little
okay.
tongue-in-cheek, but that's
sounds
what
reassuring.
Trust me, I'm a plastic surgeon.
That
yes.
sounds so great if people can actually do that. And they can, where are you located?
Just outside of D.C. in Frederick, Maryland. And my experience
and
has been that...
You, yes.
Not that people will go to another bad plastic surgeon, but there's so much psychology involved in admitting that you made a mistake that they'll stay with the bad plastic surgeon until it becomes completely catastrophic or puts them into
Incredible.
Bankruptcy. And then,
so you're saying instead
then,
of suing them, they – yes, go ahead.
That's no, just what you – you hit it right on the head. That was exactly where I was going next. And then even after
yeah.
all that, this $30,000 worth of substance abusing doctor that one lady spent, which is not at all unusual. I have worse stories. She never filed a suit against him, ever. Yeah, didn't
Crazy.
Bother to. And even when this happens, I mean, you can call the society, you can call the state, you can call the hospitals, any of those things, and you can file a complaint against these people, and by obligation, they investigate them. So people will think that a plastic surgeon belongs to this society and that they're protecting the patients, but it isn't true because they have no way of knowing what's going on unless a patient actually files a complaint with those societies. And then once you file a complaint, the society has to come out, send questioning letters and say, you know, what happened here and what's going on. And they can even say, well, send us the last reports of the last five tummy tucks that you did. We want to see how they did. And then you've got a bad doctor that's being actively investigated, and then something can be done about them. But the state, the societies, the boards, they're not looking out for you. I mean, they're busy. They're doing their things. If you don't take the trouble, and what I tell my patients is that, you know, I'm not encouraging lawsuits. I think that's craziness. But what I am encouraging is tell the people in authority what happened to you, because you may be protecting somebody else. If you can get one of those people off the market, out of the market, or at least under closer scrutiny, you may be saving some other person from having to go through what you went through.
So what would you tell people to do if they have surgery that does not meet their expectations? What should they do?
I call it two strikes and you're out. If you have surgery, there are sometimes there's a lot of times when even the best plastic surgeon will need to do some kind of a touch-up. Example is you have somebody with a severely crooked nose, and you fix the nose, and a couple of months later, that crookedness comes back. That's really just not unusual. So your doctor will say to you, well, I'm going to have to do a little touch-up on this, and that's totally reasonable. But when you get to the third time, then you need to at least have another opinion. And you know, when you did your research and you were choosing which doctor, I tell people, go to your second choice. You obviously went to your first choice. It's not working out well. Go to your second choice. And then get a total another opinion. And it may be a little bit embarrassing, but usually most plastic surgeons in this part of the country anyway don't even charge for a consultation. So go get another opinion and don't keep going. And so in the book I just say two strikes and you're out. You've got to get another opinion after two times. But any good plastic surgeon even may have to do a little touch-up on his original surgery.
Yes, you know, why is it that people are so intimidated that they feel that they really should be true to this person that they're spending all this money on who is doing such a horrible job? They don't even think about suing, forget about that. And they really don't even think about going to someone like yourself who can really do the right job. Why are they so intimidated with these surgeons?
Well, I think it's just the concept of having to admit that they made a mistake. And some of the surgeons have set themselves – I mean, I've had surgeons' offices But I've had patients come in and tell me that when they were at the surgeon's office, it's like, how can you even question this surgeon? He's got all these awards and plaques and things all hanging all over his wall. But most of those awards and plaques hanging on his walls, he paid for one way or the other. I mean, you can give a bonus to your patients to write a recommendation for you, and then pretty soon you've got a plaque on your wall, but it doesn't mean anything whatsoever. And a lot of the areas where they have top docs, which there'll be a big plaque on the wall, you pay for those things. Top docs in
America
costs
$300. It's ridiculous, and I just hope everybody reads your book.
I hope so,
Trust
too.
Trust me, I'm a plastic surgeon. Dr. Donald Kress.
That's
it's correct. Been a pleasure to have you, and your website is plasticsurgery1.com. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you so much for being able to get the word out a little bit more. Hopefully someday we'll be able to turn this around a little bit.
I hope people catch on, and I hope they are able to contact someone like you that could really make a difference. Thank you so much for being on our show. Be well.
Thank you also.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Frida,
where can
people learn more about you?
Well, they could listen to my show here. Well, he was great. I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody could really get this information, know what to do, not be intimidated by their doctors, and also know what kind of doctor to go to. So, Dr. Donald Kress, he's located outside of Washington, D.C. He's someone that'd be worthwhile, where you would have someone who would be careful, who is certified in the real sense, and who will really, watch out for you. And where can people locate me? Well, right now I'm becoming a media consultant, so that's where I am on the different radio shows. I have a website with the shows I've been on and where I'm going, drfrida.com. And basically I'm starting more of my motivational speeches out there, so I can tell you about those. And that's where I can be reached right now. But thanks for asking.
Okay, and we'll see you guys here next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. See you next week.